Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News. Education has become a hot-button issue politically and socially. Concerns are being raised across the country about the quality of education students are receiving. One of the biggest is whether our children are ready to meet the demands of a 21st century job market. Joining me now are the authors of a report released by the Buckeye Institute, a conservative public policy think tank based here in Columbus. They have some ideas for transforming higher education here in Ohio. Greg Lawson is a research fellow at the Buckeye Institute. Welcome to All Sides, Greg.
Thank you very much.
And Logan Collis is the director of technology policy at the American Consumer Institute. Welcome to All Sides, Logan.
Thanks for having me.
So obviously, let's begin with the obvious question. Why did you write this report?
Well, I think the first thing is we recognize that there needs to be changes in what we're doing in our higher education system. And this is for a whole bunch of different reasons. First of all, we need to have a workforce that can meet the new demands of the 21st century. We continue to see upgrades in technology, radical changes in technology. I mean, you've got AI coming on board, which is going to really transform a lot of things as well. And we just weren't getting the kind of workforce that we needed to be able to meet these new things and demands that employers have. That was point one. The other piece was we knew that a lot of students were going through, in particular, four-year universities and coming out with mass numbers of debt. Obviously, there were the efforts by the previous Biden administration to essentially wipe out that debt through different sort of means. We were not supportive at the Buckeye Institute of those means, but we recognized that we needed to do something about that. So we needed to get students to be able to go through, get the skills that they needed for the employers, for the jobs of the future, and to do so without being saddled with basically back-breaking debt that in many cases had all kinds of downstream effects, from delaying family formation, which is a big one, to people just never being able to get out from underneath that burden. We need to have a change. We need a higher ed system that meets today's needs, not the needs of the middle of the 20th century.
Now, Logan, this report has recommendations at the state level and the federal level. Were you just not seeing higher education moving fast enough to meet those needs? Because I would definitely say higher education is working toward, they want their graduates to get jobs. So they're working toward that.
Of course. Higher education has a vital role in the American economy, both at the state and federal level. I think the better way to think about this is that the world is rapidly changing, and we need our education policies to match that speed of change. So Greg already mentioned about how artificial intelligence is bursting on the scene. That's only one manner of technology. There's so much that is rapidly changing. So I think the better way of looking at this is how can we equip Ohio workers and also to some degree our federal workers with the skills and requirements that meet the needs and desires as the internet age matures.
Now, your report cites a need to fund students, not schools. Can you explain that, Greg?
Yeah. What we have in Ohio is when we think about the taxpayer element, the taxpayer subsidy, there's a major line item in the state budget that goes to the both the four-year universities as well as community colleges. And essentially, we used to have a system that basically just funded universities based on who was in the seats, but not based on graduation or anything. We've changed that over time to be a little more focused towards graduation, but that still doesn't get us to what we really want, which is individualized kind of funding for the students and being able to tie that to metrics on the back end. In other words, outcomes-based funding. Because if you're just funding it on appearance and things like that and not on what people are able to do, you end up with a situation where the incentives aren't appropriately aligned. And I'm not trying to say that universities aren't going to try to do the right by the students in certain ways, but if you're getting funding no matter what the outcome is, there's a lot of things that can happen. There's a lot of programs that don't necessarily equate to the jobs and get the skills for those jobs that we were talking about before. So we needed to recalibrate that funding so that it's as closely tied to individual needs, individual learning opportunities as possible. And there's some ways that we think that you can start to shift some of that state funding. Taxpayers obviously deserve a return on that investment. And if you're going to have folks coming out without getting good paying jobs and saddled with that, that's not a good return on investment for taxpayers. They need people who can get good jobs and move up the ladder of success quickly.
Now, so Logan, related to that, so Greg mentioned not rewarding schools for graduation rates. So one thing that you recommend that you say you can reward schools for is low debt to income ratios. Can you explain that?
Sure. I think there's a first. I first I'd say that the Ohio education system does a good job of encouraging community colleges to compete with other community colleges and universities to compete with other universities. But it does a bad job of encouraging community colleges and universities to compete with each other. Therefore, we deprive Ohioans of a lot of the benefits of competition. So when we talk about debt-to-income ratios, what we're saying is that taxpayers and students deserve to have a return on their dollar, a bang for their buck, if you will. So if you're going to go take on large amounts of debt, I think that's understandable if you're going to see the payoff, right? And that would be reflected in the earnings. Otherwise, if you're going to be making lower amounts of earnings, straddling somebody that makes a lower income with a lot of debt doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not good for taxpayers, and it's not good for those that are being educated themselves.
Now, the higher education would say, but it is expensive to educate someone. I mean, the tuitions need to be competitive, but this is what everyone's charging.
Of course.
They're all expensive. So what do you do?
Well, that's the role of competition, right? When you have different universities and colleges that are competing for the same students, not only does that drive up quality of the product, or in this case, the service of education, it also makes it to where the value of what you're getting is higher. It improves quality and it lowers costs. So I'm not saying that universities and community colleges aren't equipping students with the skills. I just think it needs to be more fine-tuned.
Now, and you also say that universities could be rewarded for high job placement, but how would you track that? I mean, it would have to be like self-reported. You're not following around these students being like, did you get a job in your field?
There's a lot of data that's available. There's Bureau of Labor Statistics data. There's a lot of innovative sort of modeling in terms of information that's coming out there. And I know that I think the Department of Higher Education here in Ohio has some interest in beginning to look at this process. I'm not sure that they're quite as willing to go as far as maybe what we're suggesting in this paper, but they recognize that there is a need, I think, for more of this. It does require looking at information that has not historically been looked at outside of more academic kind of endeavors and research kind of endeavors. But we have information where we can kind of track some of this stuff over time, and then we can sort of modulate the payments more according to that. So it is going to be a work in progress at first. There's no question about that. Data is always going to, you know, have their ups and downs and challenges, and it's obviously as good as the quality of the information that they're able to get. But this information is out there in different sources. It is up to state officials, I think, to pull a lot of this together. And, you know, interestingly enough, now, not that I want to hype AI all over the place, but we see AI starting to allow us to be able to synthesize data and pull data and make things more understandable and usable to folks on a regular basis. I think we need to start leveraging that kind of stuff to also be able to pull that data in, do the analysis, and then we can kind of backfill that into some of the funding formula as we move forward.
Do other states reward universities based on job placement?
There is, I believe Texas has started working in that direction. I know Tennessee has done some work in this space. I think we would like to see Ohio take really a leadership role and be even more aggressive than some of these other states. But there is definitely
Ohio,
been movement.
Is Ohio really known for taking a leadership role and being aggressive in its lawmaking?
that is a great question. And I will say that working in a number of different issue areas in Ohio, it takes a while sometimes for us to take the leadership. A lot of times we're kind of middle of the pack in terms of deciding things. I do think we have – I think that because of what's happening here in Central Ohio with some of the new job growth and some of the things that are happening and the recognition of how rapid things are changing. I mean, you see it with Intel. We just saw it with, you know, Anduril, this major AI-infused defense mm-hmm. company coming to Central Ohio. I think you're starting to see that policymakers are recognizing that you can't necessarily just lean in on the same thing that you've always done. So I'm optimistic that this is going to allow legislators and other policymakers in the administration to really start to think a little bit more outside the box, because I do think historically the point you made has been a challenge in Ohio. But I think that we have some golden opportunities here to really get Ohio to, you know, we heard from former Lieutenant Governor, now Senator Husted, a lot about the Silicon Heartland. And, you know, that's a marketing thing and stuff like that as well. But I think that it's a marketing thing that has some merit, and it does get people kind of excited. But there's a lot more policy scaffolding that we have to build in order to really fulfill that. So the good thing is we've got a marketing thing that I think is right. Now we got to match it. And we got to, it's the job of groups like the Buckeye Institute and folks like that to really keep pushing legislators and policymakers in that direction so that we don't miss the boat and essentially just keep on doing whatever the status quo was that wasn't really working.
Yeah, Logan, I was going to ask you, did you invent these recommendations or did you find them from other states and say this would work here?
Well, it's a combination. I studied economics in grad school, so obviously I spend a good amount of time looking through the literature. But it was a combination of things. So I saw some research from other groups, one of them being FreeOp. They have a scholar that's now at the American Enterprise Institute that was talking about some of these performance-based metrics. But we looked at some of these and we kind of made it our own to match the actual needs of Ohioans. And I will say, like, just to kind of add an addendum to what Greg was saying here, there is all of this from like the workforce development side, the employer side, but there's also the flip side. When you ask and survey American students why they went to college, it's overwhelmingly because they are looking for A, higher paying jobs and to further their career outcomes, right? So there is two sides to this coin. I know that universities and community colleges are already catering to the students, but I think we should have a funding system that matches that.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about ideas to reform higher education to better prepare the workforce needed for the future. With us is Greg Lawson from the Buckeye Institute and Logan Colas from the American Consumer Institute. And I would like to add that we did reach out to the Ohio Department of Higher Education for comments on this report, but they were unable to make someone available for the show today. So we do look forward to hopefully talking with the Ohio Department of Higher Education in the future about these issues. You know, the Higher Department of Education said that they were very busy working on the budget right now. Some of these things that you're recommending would be budget line items. So is this your audience? Is that who you sent this report to, the Chancellor for Higher Education?
Well, it's certainly one of them. I mean, look, I've shared it with the folks who represent the four-year universities. I've had conversations, and I'm going to have more conversations with them. I've talked a lot to the folks who represent the community colleges. And actually, over the course of time, it took a while to put this report together, and we've had some intensive conversations with even some of the presidents of some of the community colleges to kind of get a sense of what they're doing. And I think community colleges in particular are really doing a great job of meeting some of this, and also in particular for non-traditional students who may be mid-career and looking for upskilling and things like that. So that's part of the audience, too. We wanted to make sure that they were aware of it, get their feedback on it, and we're constantly, you know, doing that. But absolutely, this is the administration, the DeWine administration, the Department of Higher Education, and the General Assembly are folks that we want to look at this. We knew that this was this is going to be a hot topic in the budget. The budget is one of the biggest pieces of legislation that happens every 2 years in Ohio. I mean, probably 50-60% of all policy in the state of Ohio gets done almost. I mean, that's probably about right. And so this is a really huge thing, and it's a great opportunity to catalyze the kind of change that we're talking about. I think we recognize that some of this stuff is a little bit, you know, probably outside of what the political weight might be able to bear. But it's our job to sort of put the concepts out there and to give the information to policymakers so that they can weigh these things. And that's absolutely what we're going to do. And we're going to have this conversation on a continuing basis as soon as the budget is dropped, all throughout the budget process, because we think this is really one of the most important things to continue to position Ohio in a forward basis, both for our workforce. At the end of the day, beyond just the economy and just what it means to the state, it really is, and Logan's already said this a few times, it's about the students. It's about making sure we have people who have a good skills. They can start their families here in Ohio. We can stabilize our population. You know, there's a whole bunch of reverberating effects, downstream effects from things like this. And this is just one piece of a much larger puzzle. But we think this is a very important piece. So absolutely, policymakers, everybody who's listening, any of the state legislators, we will talk to them any time of the day to try to get these ideas out there.
Logan, if there was one part of the state funding formula for higher education that you would change, if you only got one, what would you change?
It's a tough question because I think there's a lot of great changes. If I could change one thing about SSI, I would.
Or you're going to have to tell people what SSI is.
Oh, sorry, the state share of instruction formula. That's the line item in the budget that we were talking about about how Ohio funds higher education.
So SSI stands for?
State share of instruction.
Okay.
But that's the line item in the budget for how the Ohio State House actually funds higher education in Ohio, mm-hmm. both for higher education institutions in general. But if there was one thing I could change, it would be increasing more of these performance-based metrics. But The way I would do it, if I personally were to start it, is I would create my own separate a separate line item that actually created competition between community colleges and university. The way the funding system works now is we give community colleges and universities siloed funds, but there's no competition between the community colleges and universities over a set pot of money. So if you had, you know, another set aside that put universities and community colleges on the exact same platform, I think you'd start to see a lot more competition emerge.
When community colleges and universities would say that they are very different in their way that they run and their goals, so maybe they shouldn't compete. They run parallel.
In a lot of senses, they are. Mm-hmm. They are complementary in a sense. Mm-hmm. It's not unheard of for community colleges to be thought of as a stepping stone to universities. But I think it's much more nuanced than that, because especially in a world of rapidly changing technology, and I talk about this a lot at the American Consumer Institute on how we might be on the precipice of the next technological revolution, we have no guarantee that's going to be the way it continues to go. 4-year degrees, of course, are still going to have their value, but so will short-term degrees, 2-year degrees, and also so will micro-credentials, which is a completely separate topic, right? That's something that can be achieved in less than a year, and oftentimes that's funneled through community colleges, and Ohio already did a lot of policies to complement that already, but our funding structures don't really match that. So, yes, they can be complementary, but there should also be competition. There's a given pool here.
All right, we have to take a break, but remind me, we'll talk about micro-credentials, because that's kind of a word no one has ever used before on my show. So,
okay, happy to.
This is All Sides. We're going to continue talking about policy recommendations for higher education when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. What can be done here in Ohio to improve the higher education system, especially when it comes to preparing graduates to meet the demands of the 21st century job market? We're posing those questions to the authors of a report released by the Buckeye Institute, a public policy think tank here in Columbus. The report's authors have some suggestions. Still with us, Greg Lawson, research fellow at the Buckeye Institute. Thanks again for being here, Greg.
Thank you for so much.
And Logan Collis, director of technology. I'm mixing up all my words.
It's okay.
Director of Technology Policy at the American Consumer Institute. Welcome, Logan.
Thanks for having me.
So, there was a controversial bill that moved through the Ohio General Assembly last term. It was a sweeping piece of legislation that would do a lot of things in higher education. It would have eliminated diversity, equity, and inclusion training, prohibited faculty from striking. It prohibited professors from teaching on certain subjects that were considered controversial. And this bill did not end up passing, but lawmakers spent a lot of time on it and are expected to bring at least parts of it up again this term. So I wanted to ask you about this bill, because you're proposing very different things in this report to overall higher education. It's so different than those legislative priorities that were in this bill. So what are your thoughts on that? Because in your report, you make a point to say Ohio must pursue common sense reforms. So are you saying that that bill wasn't that?
No, I would say I testified in general in favor of many of the provisions that were in that. It was Senate Bill, I believe, 83 from the last General Assembly. I would say that these are reforms that we need on the fiscal side, the funding side. That legislation really didn't deal with any of the funding. Mm-hmm. It didn't deal with any of that. Now, one of the recommendations we have in here is wasn't touched on that bill, but is more in that wheelhouse, which is dealing with tenure and some things that we've seen in some other states with how you deal with faculty tenure. We can talk about that maybe later. But I would say that I see these things as more complementary. We really think we – do a lot on the fiscal side of things at the Buckeye Institute and really looking at how the state budget and the spending of the tax dollars is operating. And that's why we really wanted to zero in on things like the subsidy line item, which is essentially taxpayer dollars that are going straight to the universities and community colleges, as well as there's basically assistance kind of funding, Ohio College, the College Opportunity Grant, which is a thing for lower income folks. That's also a taxpayer funded thing. But I would say, and I do think that legislation is largely going to come back. I believe it's going to come back with probably many of those provisions that you were just citing. I think it's highly likely to, and I think it's probably, there's a good chance it passes in this General Assembly. And so there will be a lot of discussion about it. And we probably will be engaged in that issue. I mean, there's a lot of things that are important there to make sure that universities are actually focusing on their real mission as opposed to some of the extraneous things. And frankly, you know, one of the things, another recommendation we made in here that kind of ties in, even though it's not directly related, is dealing with capping administrative costs. Part of why universities are so expensive is we have had an explosion of administrators. Now, I think a lot of universities will tell you we need a lot of administrators because we draw down lots of federal grants and we need things like that. We need the staff to do that. On the other hand, a lot of these administrators are dealing with things like DEI and some of these subjects that have become very controversial. And in fact, a lot of people, a lot of private corporations are rolling back. We see what the Trump administration has already started to do in Washington. I think that if you're spending a lot of money in that space, and especially if any of the money from the taxpayers is going into that space and not going into educating students for the 21st century like we've been talking about, that's probably not a good ROI on those tax dollars. So in that sense, these concepts do kind of intermingle and work in concert with each other, even though our main focus is this and the recommendations in this report. But I think some of those other recommendations have merit, and we probably will testify as time goes on.
Now, Logan, Greg mentioned, you know, your report would focus more on the budget and those fiscal line items. But lawmakers do have power. Lawmakers can, you know, if they're going to pass a law that has all those things that I listed a moment ago in it, they can pass a law with some of your policies. They can pass a law that can impact the budget, right? So where do you see your recommendations falling? I mean, it can't fall on deaf ears with lawmakers.
Yeah. So first, let me just add another addendum to what Greg was saying. And I think it's very fascinating that sometimes, although these are very separate papers, there are some places where they do intermingle. Research by Dr. Richard Vetter, for example, actually found that if the administration to student ratio would have stayed the same since 1976, that tuition would have actually been 20% lower. So there is a financial cost here. As for what we're looking at through some of these proposals, I think a lot of them are going to happen through the budget because they are more financial reforms.
What do you think of, you know, the General Assembly focusing on these other issues? Because in the introduction of your report, you suggest that Ohio policymakers pursue common sense reforms to the state's higher education system. So keeping in mind that what makes sense to one person may not make sense to another person, right? Did you have that in mind whenever you said common sense reforms?
Well, I had financial reforms in mind, specifically trying to introduce more competition into the Ohio higher education system, because I think it does need an update, right? I think at the time when we were first changing around the funding formulas, a lot of it was on course and degree completions. So it was about 80%. And to be clear, we're not suggesting that we eliminate that entirely. We just are looking for more of a balance. We suggested that we go down from 80% on degree and course completions, going down from 80% to 50%, and then introducing in more performance-based metrics. So for that reason, it's likely to go through the budget. But I would say that, you know, life is about balance. And when you talk about balance, I do think that is more of a common sense idea. That's what I had in mind.
Yeah. Greg, you chuckled whenever I said one person's common sense is not another's. So,
I would say this. We know that taxpayers are putting money out for a lot of different services in government, and they want to make sure that they're getting something for it. I think the biggest thing you get when I talk about return on investment, I guess I probably should have said this even earlier, is you want to make sure that if you're putting money into these institutions, that the students that are coming out are able to work in, obviously, the new economy, because that means they're getting paid enough to pay off the debt, and then they makes it less likely that they have other issues that where they have to have other interactions with government services that you don't want them to have to do and cost taxpayers money. So the return is good jobs. And if we're common sense is how do we make sure that we get this system up and running in a way that meets that goal? And things that are a diversion from that goal. Now, I understand there's a philosophical concept about higher education and the formation of citizenship and things like that. There is a broader conversation that we can have in that sense. But when we're talking about what taxpayers are doing and the return on people taking the money that they have earned that is going to these places, they need to know that it's going to come out on the back end with something positive. And a lot of things that universities have done, a lot of the hiring, and I think the report that Logan mentioned, that Dr. Richard Vedder, he's actually from Ohio mm-hmm. University here in Ohio and is mm-hmm. very well known in higher education reform circles. That right there, the administration, and the more administrators you are and the more they get focusing in on some of these other extraneous concepts, whether you think they're meritorious or not, that is not what higher education was really. It's not getting you necessarily into jobs. And it's a lot of money that's being spent. And the question is that a return on? Is that a good return on the investment? And if it's costing you 20% more in tuition in order to pay for all of these folks that aren't necessarily teaching faculty. And I mean, this is a problem in education, even in K-12. We have way more administrators and per student than we used to have. And so a lot of the funding that we always talk about is going to administration. Well, we need to scale that back, because if we don't do that, we're never going to be able to get that return on the investment, because it's going to be going into all these other things. And I just don't think the average common sense Ohioan thinks that that is what their money should be going towards.
A different version of common sense would say that lawmakers are spending too much time, a lot of time, because that bill, they spent a lot of time on that bill. So they spent a lot of time talking about DEI and talking about what is a controversial subject that higher education shouldn't be dealing with, when they could have been working on something in the budget, right? Logan, what do you think of that?
Well, what I would say is that right now, at least for me, my focus is on mm-hmm. on the budgetary side, the financial obligations. I'm sure that the sponsor of Senate Bill 83 from the last GA, he's been very notable about the fact that there's a good chance that we could see a lot of that return. I think that's its own independent debate, but again, there is some commingling here. But actually, on the financial side, I do think the General Assembly should and must spend a lot of time, you know, reevaluating the higher education funding formulas that we mm-hmm. that we use here in Ohio. And I think these are kind of two different conversations that are walking past each other. And yes, they are related.
Yeah. But there's going to be a lot of time spent redebating this bill when sure. they could be working on other things.
Well, I mean, I personally would like to see a lot of time spent on the budget, because mm-hmm. I think it's a foundational financial document. Mm-hmm. I think one of the cliches that's kind of thrown around in the policy world sometimes is that budgets are a moral document. And in this case, I think we should be spending time talking about the how that we can ensure taxpayers, receive a solid return on their investment, and also for the students themselves to match the needs of what they say they actually want in higher education. And I know that these debates may happen simultaneously, mm-hmm. but I'm personally looking at the budget, just because I think that's where we're going to see a lot of the financial reforms that directly impact the pocketbooks of students.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about higher education and how to prepare the workforce for the future with Greg Lawson from the Buckeye Institute and Logan Collis from the American Consumer Institute. And I did want to add that we reached out to the Ohio Department of Higher Education for comments on this report, but they were unable to make someone available for the show today. Let's talk, you mentioned it briefly before, Greg, let's talk about the Ohio College Opportunity Grant. First of all, explain what it is, and then you can talk about your recommendation when it comes to it.
Yeah, what it basically is it's designed to help students, particularly lower income students, and sometimes some non-traditional students. And what I mean by that is you may have folks that aren't just coming right out of high school and going straight to community college or a university, but are working folks, and maybe they even have families and things like that, and they're going to night school and things of that nature in order to, again, brush up on some of their skills, upskill, get the kind of things that they need to move up that ladder with whatever job it is that they might have. But one of the things that is a challenge is we have a policy in Ohio. There's Pell Grants. These are federal grants. This is federal aid that can be used, again, usually by low-income folks to be able to help pay for some of the costs. But in Ohio, We basically have a policy where you have to exhaust all of your Pell Grant before you can get access to this Ohio-based additional dollars. And what happens is that works fairly well for four-year universities because of how high the tuition mm-hmm. is and things. But for community colleges, it doesn't typically work. What usually happens is you don't have folks who could get this college opportunity grant being able to get it to use in community colleges because they have to use this other program first. And there's some reforms that we talk about for the Pell Grant as well, by the way, which is a federal reform, not a state reform. But the reason we want to get rid of that particular policy we have in Ohio now is because some of these non-traditional students that could use that extra funding to help them in community college are not really able to today. So we'd like to get rid of that distinction. There's some reasons that they put that policy in place, and I'm sympathetic to that. But if we're trying to get people in and out and upskilled as quickly as possible for all the reasons we've been talking about, this is another key mechanism that can help them do that. And it's kind of not technically completely off the table, but in practicality, it is generally off the table for most of these students.
Can it be used for both? You want it to be used for both?
We want it to where you can use them in tandem. And so if you want to be able to use these the College Opportunity Grant, it would be able to be used more often in community colleges than it is under the current policy.
And Logan, Greg mentioned you have some federal recommendations. So he talked about Pell Grants. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So Pell Grants are predominantly designed right now just in effect for universities. Mm-hmm. We'd like to see that extended aid to community colleges and also a step further. And I threw out this word before, and I saw your eyes peek up a little bit. We talked about micro-credentialing.
Yes.
Right?
So that's like a certificate to...
Right.
Is it to like a certificate to be a plumber? Or
well, I don't know. Like for plumbers, you'd likely go get your own certification. But micro credentials are just that. They're very small and they're stackable. You can get multiple of them, and you can get them usually within a year.
Yeah, give me an example of.
An example would be getting a micro credential for a specific type of auto work or something new in the technology field to deal with artificial intelligence.
Oh, okay.
Something Amazon web services.
Yeah, web services. Something
web
that
services.
Right. So Ohio actually has a program specifically geared towards the technology side called TechCred that upskills already existing workers into these new occupations. Basically, it takes people that are currently on the job working and says, hey, an employer might want to move you up the ladder up to a different skill level to do this other job that they might not have the workers for. So we're going to also, allow you to go back and learn this degree really quickly within the course of a year.
Okay.
Right. So it allows you to meet rapidly changing labor market needs. Is really the takeaway from this. But Pell Grants can't be used for that either.
Okay.
Right? And I will add, neither can the College Opportunity Grant. Right? So what we're looking for is a more nimble structure that allows that the education dollars that we're going to be spending to be used on the needs of the students wherever they determine that to be.
Has there been any movement federally to consider changing the Pell Grant? That seems above Ohio's pay grade there.
There has been. It came in I believe it was last year. Actually, Ohio Senator Rob Portman played a significant role in trying to expand what the Pell Grant can be used for.
Okay.
That's something I'd like to see come back, and I think it very much emulates some of the state-level recommendations that we're making in our report. So maybe if Ohio can pass some of this, and we could be a case study for how effective it'd be at the federal level.
And I would just say, I think that obviously former Senator Portman was heavily involved in that. I think that you'll see, while I haven't had specific conversations with like Senator Marino and now Senator Husted, I think that there is a lot of ferment in this space in Washington now, more than we would have seen in recent years, partly because there's been some real shifting and philosophical shifting and focusing on these kind of issues. And I think that this is one of those things that could be a win-win. And it's actually a bipartisan issue because I think Sherrod Brown used to support it as well conceptually. So I think that, obviously we now have two Republican senators, but I think that this is something that can cross things. And I think this is an idea that there's been legislation introduced several Congresses, but the political landscape is such that it's getting better and better and more possible to really push something like this through.
Being able to afford a four-year college is getting harder and harder. Mm-hmm. So these Pell Grants are important. The Ohio College Opportunity Grant is important. It could really change the pot of money if it's available for these other programs for community colleges and micro-credentials. But also, it will help us have the workforce we need, mm-hmm. right? So I guess some of these jobs you mentioned earlier, you know, Intel's coming in and Anduril is going to have 4,000 jobs, and maybe those jobs don't need a four-year degree. Is that what you're saying?
Sure. And I think that's a very likely scenario. At least some of them won't. Some of them mm-hmm. probably will, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, and as you continue to see these things happen with Intel and Anduril, obviously we see this with the data centers that are coming in, and while they don't have as many jobs after they're constructed in the long run, they create a clustering effect. And that means that Central Ohio is going to start to pull in more and more people from other states in order that are interested in these kind of jobs, and we're going to become more and more known for that. Mm-hmm. And as that happens, those opportunities are going to happen. So it's not – those are certainly the ones that I think are on the tip of everybody's tongues right now, but it's what comes because those are coming here. It's the other ones that come, and it's the suppliers that come, and it's all of that. And if we – and I don't think Ohio is ready for that yet, really. I think that we have – we've started to go down this road. Logan mentioned some things like TechCred, and there's been some good things, frankly, that the current DeWine and former Lieutenant Governor Husted was working on in to improve the workforce stuff. But so they certainly recognize the need for it. There's been some positive steps, but to the point that you had raised earlier, sometimes we lag a little bit in Ohio, but I think the recognition of that gives us a chance to really push it hard, which is why we really want to inject ideas like this into the discourse, because we need policymakers to be thinking about all of these things simultaneously as these opportunities continue to come. Because if they don't, and if we just kind of sit where we are now, even though we've made some improvements, it's not enough, and we won't reach that potential. And then, you know, what we don't want to have is 20 years from now say, oh, we were all talking about the Silicon Heartland, and then it turned out it didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. That's not where we want to be. I don't think that's where it has to be. I think we can actually fulfill that promise, but this is one piece of that puzzle.
And
Logan?
And I think Intel is such a fascinating example, because in the semiconductor supply chain, it epitomizes a lot of the higher education opportunities and plagues, pros and cons of the entire semiconductor supply chain and what higher education reform in an ideal world would look like. Because when you're talking about the semiconductor supply chain, there are labor shortages up and down it. Sometimes I think it's easy to walk into this conversation and just say, hey, we don't have enough workers. But digging a little deeper, what exactly does that mean, right? Is it the PhD level? Well, there was a lot of reporting. There's reporting from Politico that talked about how it was super high-skilled PhD level talent. Mm-hmm. That was in shortage. But you also look up and down the supply chain, especially in the face of worrying population trends. Mm. And you see that these labor shortages are up and down. It's all the way from associate's degrees, associate level engineers, which again aren't always four-year level degrees, right? A lot of times this is associate level degrees. But you see it in associate's levels, bachelor level, all the way up to the PhD level. But because of that labor shortage, it means that these cutting edge technological firms are attracted to the places that have pockets of robust talent. Right. That was one of the reasons that Intel picked the Columbus region to begin with. A, it was growing. Columbus is rapidly growing. But also the flip side of it, you're able to draw in all sorts of talented labor pools from Ohio State, the community colleges in the area. And by the way, when you do that, they're also investing in their own workforce initiatives to try and meet the talent needs of the day. So if we could develop a higher education system that emulates these successes of furthering on what we're already doing well, to equip our workers and Ohioans with the skills necessary, all of a sudden you have a new and different advantage to attracting employment and jobs to the region.
Well, and Intel picked us because we gave them some pretty good tax incentives to pick here, right? Yeah, we were very generous. All right, we will continue this conversation in just a moment. We are speaking with the Buckeye Institute about some recommendations for higher education. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking with the authors of a report issued by the Buckeye Institute, a conservative think tank based here in Columbus. Suggestions of policy reforms that lawmakers could consider adopting. The goal is to improve Ohio's higher education system and make sure students are better prepared for the 21st century. Still with us, Greg Lawson, research fellow at the Buckeye Institute, and Logan Collis, director of technology policy at the American Consumer Institute. And I wanted to add again that we did invite the Ohio Department of Higher Education to be on the show today. They were unable to make someone available for the show at this time. So I wanted to talk about universities and the way that they are building. You know, there's an explosion of building and administration on college campuses over the last 30 years. And in that time, there's also been a closing and consolidation of smaller colleges and universities. How can they reduce administrative spending? You know, without the big, beautiful buildings and the high quality spaces, students won't attend. What are your ideas? I mean, the colleges need to look beautiful and they need to update in order to be competitive.
Well, I would say this. Obviously, they need to have the right kind of technology. They need to be able to plug into things that are changing so that they can actually educate people, obviously, as to what's happening. So there's always going to be some degree of capital expenditure and renovation and new things like that that happens. That's natural. I think some of what universities do is they kind of create, look, I went to Ohio State, and I loved the old Ohio Union. The new Ohio Union is very different than the old Ohio Union that I remember when I was a student here. And I would submit to you that the old Ohio Union was perfectly sufficient to the task at hand. Then the new one, and nothing, and I'm sure students love it, and I don't want to be a Debbie Downer or anything like that with it, but that's a lot of money, and I know that's not all tuition money. There's other funding streams that come in, but that's a lot of money that gets spent on things that are essentially nice-to-haves, but not necessarily need-to-haves. And I think this is the point that we're raising. And when you see some of these smaller folks closing down underutilized degree programs and closing buildings down, the reason that's happening is because we also have a big demographic challenge in the long run. There's less kids, less students. Inevitably, there's going to be less people going into higher education. No matter how much we revamp this system, there's going to be less people because there's just less people in general. And so I would say focus on the programming, focus on doing the things that are going to get the students out the door as fast as they can with skills. And I think that you'll find that students will reward the universities that do that and do that well. I think in the past it was an arms race because there was all this uptick in students constantly going in to universities and everybody's like, well, we got to have the biggest, best, brightest in order to incentivize or to make it attractive. That's not the world of the future, probably because of the demographics. The future is going to be people are going to be a little more concerned about what they're spending out of their own pocket, how much debt they're incurring, what are they really going to get on the backside of it. And I think that if you make the right investments, it's not to say that there's not going to be new construction and new buildings and ever or anything like that. But I think that to some extent, we have way too many cranes out there in too many situations. And in 5 to 10 years, some of these places, maybe less so Ohio State, but some of the other places are going to find that they're going to have underutilized buildings and they're going to be trying to figure out, well, what the heck do I do with these buildings that we built 10 years ago that now aren't being filled? And that's going to become its own set of challenges. And in some places, it already is a challenge. So I get it. I understand what the motivation is, but that was a model that was kind of a model that is starting to sort of go away as times change.
Logan, should we be pivoting more things online? That would be cheaper.
I think online education definitely has a role. And in fact, when it comes to artificial intelligence, we're already seeing massive gains. Sometimes I try and imagine, because anybody that tells you that they can predict with certainty what the world's going to look like in 10 years, it's an impossible endeavor, right? But we can take educated guesses and learn from what we're seeing right now. For example, in Africa, there's been some economic research talking about how artificial intelligence can almost function as a one-on-one tutor, mm-hmm. right? Which is changing the world, in my opinion, for the better, because obviously as people get more education, not only do they make more money, the value that they're adding to their peers also increases, right? So I think online education has a part of it. My sister, for example, went through Western Governors University. For her, like, every student has different needs. She didn't like the brick and mortar model. She didn't really want to it's not something that she wanted to do. And she had a bit of a career pivot and went into teaching. And I'm very proud of her for that. So I do think that online education definitely has a role to play. But sometimes it does depend, right? I know for me, one of the things that afforded me the opportunity to actually go work at the Buckeye Institute, I was actually working in D.C. at the time for a different organization. And then COVID threw everything online, right? So I specifically picked a master's degree program that would be specifically designed for me to get in-class instruction. Hmm. And then when COVID shifted everything online, all of a sudden I became more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
The position over at the Buckeye Institute opened up, and you know, I spent nearly 4 years over at Buckeye because of the benefits of online education. So there is the affordability factor. Right?
You want to say cheap, yeah.
Right, but the cost, the out-of-pocket cost, mm-hmm. and whether that's worth the investment is always the key, right? So it's not only what you're spending, it's are you getting back in return your money's worth, right? Mm-hmm. I have experience both through me and other members of my family that saw the value of online education, and I think it has the potential to create individualized, meet individuals where they are.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to take some time to talk about one recommendation you have where there's a list of states, and it includes Pennsylvania and Maryland. They're eliminating the bachelor's degree requirements from some state jobs. And you say Ohio should follow suit. Not everything requires a 4-year degree.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's a really big thing. And I think Ohio is actually starting to kind of go in this direction. But I think that and I don't necessarily have the specific ones at the top of my head right now as to which ones you would literally do that with. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to have a pretty rigorous examination of what's absolutely required. Because, you know, higher education became a bit of a, to the extent that it gives you the skills you need, it plays an incredibly indispensable role. But sometimes, some of the times people just come out with degrees and it's not even, and they ultimately don't even go obviously into a field that's got anything to do with the degree they did, notwithstanding the debt that they went into. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, the degree became sort of like a signal in the marketplace to businesses, oh, this person can basically learn and stuff. And it became an expensive way to sort basically labor. And I think what you're finding is that you kind of pushed a lot of people into expensive things that they didn't necessarily need to have. And we spent years telling people the only way you could do things was to go to a 4-year university. And now we're, I think, moving away from that because of necessity. And I think that doing that for state jobs, obviously, I think that should be something that the private sector would like to embrace as well, as much as possible, and to really be sure that we're calibrating it. I mean, we do licensing reform and occupational licensing reform at the Buckeye Institute because there are certain things that need licenses, absolutely, for true health and safety issues. And there's a lot of stuff we license that we probably don't really need to. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a similar concept to some of these degrees. We need to get to what can a person do? Can they prove that they've got the skills? And it needs to be based on that, not some kind of an arbitrary document that you get that makes you have to spend a lot more money, go into debt, and have all the other attendant challenges that are hitting and afflicting a ton of young people.
I mean, private businesses can make that shift, you know, whether they require a 4-year degree or not. Is the state harder to move in that aspect? I mean, is it just like ingrained that this is the job description and it always has been that way?
Well, I think over the course of the last couple of decades, there's been an increase in what we call credential inflation, mm-hmm. right? One thing, something caused the demand for credentials to rise. And then as everybody got more credentials, employers then pivoted and like, well, I have this labor pool that already has credentials. Shouldn't everybody have this? Right? Right? So you end up with what we call credential inflation. But I think what's kind of interesting and almost a bit paradoxical is that higher education reform can begin outside of the ivory tower, mm-hmm. and what we actually require for job placements and job requirements. So some of that is on the private sector side. That's what we do on the occupational licensing. That's what the government requires of students to meet private sector jobs. And then there's the other issue of like in demand state jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, saying that this shouldn't be a requirement doesn't mean that state governments shouldn't hire based on talent. They should, mm-hmm. right? But it shouldn't be this like a piece of paper that you're using to determine as a litmus test of whether you're capable of doing the job. It should be the actual skill level, and that's the same for both in the government and outside of it.
Well, sometimes the piece of paper though says that you've had the right training. Anyone can just walk in off the street and say, "Sure, I know how to analyze your economics," right?
But oh, yeah.
you don't want someone without an economics degree coming to work with you.
There's a role for it.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not saying that there isn't a role for it. I'm just saying that as labor becomes more scarce, as it becomes harder to find people, that sometimes you have to make difficult trade-offs. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be healthy, both for the private sector and also for the government, to spend more time evaluating based off skills.
This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and you've been listening to Greg Lawson, a research fellow at the Buckeye Institute. Thanks for being here, Greg.
Thank you so much.
And Logan Collis, Director of Technology Policy at the American Consumer Institute. Thanks, Logan.
Thanks for having me.
And they co-authored a report from the Buckeye Institute on transforming higher education here in Ohio. This has been All Sides. Thanks for joining us on 89.7 NPR News.